and welcome to Alzheimer Speaks Radio. I'm your host, Lori LeBay, and I'm so excited that you're joining us today. We are going to have a fascinating conversation, as usual, as we learn from people all around the world at all ages and stages of life. Stay tuned as we shift our dementia care from crisis to comfort.
Here we go. What you think about?
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Lori LeBay, the host of Alzheimer Speaks Radio, and I'm thrilled you're here to join us today. We're going to be talking about the challenges that young adults have when they are caring for a loved one with dementia. And before I introduce you to our guest, I always just want to welcome our new listeners. For those of you that aren't familiar with us, Alzheimer Speaks was started because my own mother lived with the disease for 30 years. And I just felt lost and frustrated, like, where are the rest of the families like us? And where are all the services, products, and tools? And why aren't we having a conversation regarding this on a broader level? So I decided I was going to tackle that myself and see if we could connect people to services, products, and tools, fill them with hope, and have a realistic conversation on what dementia means to everybody and how does it affect them. Our goal is really to give you sound information, not just sound bites. You know, our shows usually go for about an hour, but they're an authentic conversation. So maybe you could be our next guest. Everyone is welcome. We just have one rule, and that is that we have to be respectful in terms of our conversation. So we have people living with dementia. We have family members. We have business professionals in a wide variety of realms. We have musicians and directors and authors and activists and advocates and children. So everyone truly is welcomed on the show. And if you're interested, just reach out to me at radio@alzheimerspeaks.com. I also want to give a shout out to the Mark Arneson Band. They allow us to use their music called Clarion Call for our opening music. And you can go ahead and download that on any of your favorite music platforms. I also want to let you know that we have a main platform called AlzheimerSpeaks.com. And there you will find all kinds of free educational resources. We have one section just devoted to that. So please check that out. We also have a tab for our upcoming book that's going to be launched. I have had a keynote called Betty the Bald Chicken, Lessons in How to Care Forever. And we're finally making that into a children's book that's going to be launching here soon. But we're taking pre-orders. And then if you're looking for someone for speaking, for training or educational purposes or marketing and branding, we have all kinds of opportunities that you can tap into there. Who else? I wanted to give a shout out to the Adaptive Equipment and Caregiving Corner, as well as the Footbar Walker. And of course, I want to give a shout out to Dementia Map, which is a global resource directory that myself and Dave Wiedrich put together. We have over 150 categories that you can search. There's a blog, there's a calendar of events, there's a glossary of terms, and so much more. So please feel free to go to dementiamap.com and check that out. And if you'd like a tour, there's a spot where right in the upper right-hand corner, you can click on that. And actually, I would be the one to give you that tour. So I hope to see you soon checking out Dementia Map. But for right now, let's get to our topic at hand. And that is, again, young adults facing challenges when they're taking care of a parent or a loved one with dementia. So today I want to introduce you to Lily Morales, whose mother has what doctors believe is vascular dementia. Lily has been on this journey with her mother now for 8 years, and our focus today will really be on the why and how young adults are caring for those living with a form of dementia, and how is it affecting not only the person with dementia's life, but their own. So Lily, I'm really excited to have you on the show today. So first of all, thank you for taking the time. I really appreciate it.
No, thank you for having me here.
Well, you know, I always start out with the first question with all of my guests being, have you been touched by dementia in your own family and circle of friends? And I've already told our audience that your mom has been living with dementia for about 8 years. But do you want to give us a little more history on that? Or have there been others in your family or circle of friends that you've dealt with as well?
That in my family, no. My mom is the first one in my family to have been diagnosed with dementia. I think it was when I was with my ex. He's the one that actually brought it to my attention. Like, hey, your mom has an issue. She's having a lot of memory issue, and she's showing signs of dementia because he has his grandma that passed away had Alzheimer's. So he was the one that told me, like, I think your mom has it too. And I was, at first I was like, no, she's fine. She just forgets, you know, it's the age. It's like, you know, it's just, what's it called? It's just her, you know, having so much in her brain at the one time and she's not, you know, processing very well. She's just forgetting little things here and there. And then sure enough, couple years later, she has a heart attack and her memory, it actually is worse. And they told me, like, do you know your mom has this? And I'm like, I've been suspecting it for a while, but her doctors don't think she has it. But they're like, no, she does have dementia. And we think it's vascular. They haven't really told me officially that it's vascular, but because she has heart issues, they think it's vascular dementia.
Okay. Well, thanks for sharing that. When you first found out, I know you said, you know, your ex kind of told you that he thought this was happening and stuff. How did it hit you emotionally?
It was a lot. I was just like, all right. I don't think I have ever even processed it because I haven't really shown any emotion to it other than my mom needs me. My mom needs me to be the strong one. My mom needs me to be the one remembering for her. And my mom needs me to be the one to make sure she is, you know, taking her medicine, going to her doctor's appointment. So I don't think I have honestly processed it in my brain fully.
Okay. Well, and that's fairly common. You know, one of the things we talked offline about was the importance of spreading awareness about the disease, especially to younger adults. What's the best way for us to go about doing that? And are you actively doing that yourself?
With my friends, my group of friends, yes. I keep telling them, like, wow, it's one thing about taking care of a child, but there's another thing when it's taking care of a parent, and especially with the decline. A child learns from their mistakes. A child knows what they're doing is wrong. But a parent that has dementia, it's the opposite. They, you know, you tell them, no, that's not right. You try to correct them. You try to teach them the right way. But 10 minutes later, they do it again, or they forget what's going on, and it's a little more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. I try to, like, talk to my friends about it, like how it is, because a lot of my friends do have kids, and it's not that I compare them. It's just that it's just like it's very, very different, but similar at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it. And it is a really kind of a good picture, because I think people can see where kids grow and they learn, you know, processes and things like that. And when they don't, we know how frustrated we get as parents or just people around watching the situation. And again, when it comes to dementia, a lot of them lose the ability to make those processes. You know, go forward. And so it can be really frustrating when someone's repeating themselves 45 times in 10 minutes, or when, you know, I just told you that. And a lot of times we're giving directions in multiple steps that they can't handle anymore. And we have to pull those back. What kind of response do you get from your friends when you talk about, you know, dealing with your mom's dementia? Do you think they understand?
Some of them do, 'cause I do know a couple of my friends that they have their own loved ones that has like dementia or some type of Alzheimer's. The rest, I think they try to understand. They're very supportive. They're very they'd be like, "You're such a great daughter. You're taking your time. You're sacrificing a lot," and it is a lot of sacrifices that you do have to make on a day-to-day basis. But I just try to keep it positive, and I just try to make sure my mom's happy at the end of the day.
That's very commendable, and that's not an easy task all the time to do that. What do you think would be some of the best ways for organizations to be able to reach younger generations and educate them, and make them more aware about the different types of dementia and the care that's needed?
I think targeting them through social media. Social media is one of the biggest things that influences young adults' lives. They're on social media, Instagram, Snapchat, TikTok, a lot. And I mean, you can't personally know what it's like with dementia until you actually go through it with yourself, with the parent or grandparents or a friend or somebody that's close to your family. So I think social media is one of the biggest things that everybody uses. They're on it day to day. I know I'm on TikTok quite a few times a day. But yeah, I would say social media.
Okay, and that is helpful, and everybody kind of has their own brands and favorites, of what they like out there too. Just like with using a phone, some people like to talk, some people like to leave messages, some people like to text, all of those different things there. One of the problems I think that people have is putting ourselves first as care partners. There's a lot of guilt. We feel really bad about that. Have you experienced that yourself, where you just feel bad when you think about doing something for yourself?
Yeah, actually every day. So basically, I start work at 5 a.m., but I work from home, luckily. And when I wake up, I go straight to the bathroom, and sometimes I'm just like, "Wait, wait, wait, I really, really, really gotta go. Let me go first. I'll let you go next. Even if you have an accident, I'll clean you up. It's fine. But let me go first." little stuff like that. I try to put myself first a little bit, having to shower them. Now that I don't really have any type of support at home, where I could take a couple minutes for myself to go to the bathroom on my own, I have to bring her with me, or then she'll run off. Or if I have to go to shower, I have to bring her with me because then she'll run off. And it's just little things like that where you have to make the sacrifices and putting them first, but also all take care of yourself. You have to find a happy medium of where you could be doing both, be watching her and be doing the things you need to do. Like when I'm working, she's sitting right next to me and I'm keeping her entertained.
Okay. Well, and the things you're talking about, going to the bathroom and taking a shower, those are most people would not put those as kind of self-care, taking care of themselves. They just take that as for granted. Of course I would be able to do that, but it isn't that easy, at all, to be able to do that. Now, when you say she would wander off, would she leave your home, or would she maybe get into something that wasn't safe within the home? What are you dealing with as far as wandering?
A little bit of both. At first, she would try to cook something, and she'll try to mess with the stove knobs, but then we put the childproof stove knobs. So she left that alone after she figured out that she can't mess with it anymore. And now it's more like of her trying to run away. There's been a couple times that I go to the bathroom, I come out and she's gone, and I'm like chasing after her down the street. She's already down the block, going I don't know where, but she's long gone, and I'm chasing after her trying to get her back into the house. Because you're not allowed to lock the gate because then it's considered kidnapping.
Okay. So do you use any type of tracking modes at all, like with bracelets or slipping, you know, they have those oh, I can't, those tags that you can maybe slip into a pocket in their clothes or their shoes. Have you tried anything like that?
I actually do. I have a watch that tracks her, and also I have a bracelet with saying her name, dementia patient. If she's easily confused and she gets lost, to give me a call in case she is found in some and she doesn't know where she is. In case she doesn't, she's not wearing the watch. She's always wearing the bracelet, so we always have one or the other.
Okay, because I know there's other things too, like there are little alarms that you can buy, you know, for the door. There's cameras, there's so many different things that people can leverage. But again, there's that point of are you invading their privacy or what's safe? And so I know even like at Menards and Home Depot, you can buy little alarms for the doors for like typically under like $25. They can just because over time, I mean, maybe you're falling asleep and all of a sudden they're going to scoot out. And that would, you know, wake you up in case something like that would happen or because they can be kind of tricky. Other people have changed where the locks are on the door. I don't know if you've ever tried that where they've put a even like a chain link or another deadbolt up towards the top and they don't know to look there to unlock it because they're just used to doing the regular doorknob thing for unlocking. So there's all kinds of different things I know that people have tried, but that whole safety issue, that's really scary. That's a really scary thing. And it's nice if she wears the watch, but if she's not wearing the watch, you know, then you really can't monitor her with having that, you know, kind of invisible fence around her to know what's what. And there are different types of bracelets too. I don't know, they used to have just kind of the metal ones that were engraved and would have the person's name and maybe a contact and what the issue was. But now they have ones even with USBs on them that can have all kinds of contact information and even medications and stuff. So if there was an emergency, the EMTs and stuff could plug that in and be able to find information out or nicknames. And I mean, there's just so many variables there. What type of bracelet have you chosen to use?
It's a metal plate one with the information, and
Okay.
then it's the watch that we have. It's called TheraCare. It's a GPS tracking watch. It's pretty accurate. Just that the battery life on those watch, you have to at least charge it at least 3 times a day. And, sometimes when you're running amok and you're running to errands, you're cleaning, you're doing this, and you're trying to get them to stay clean, because what if they have an accident? So it's a lot to like continue to be charging the watch.
Yeah, that's a lot every time. I know some people use the Apple Watches or they will just use a regular phone and put the geo search. But again, if the person doesn't grab the phone, doesn't do you any good. That's why the air tags, I know some people have used that where they've even made like a little pocket on their clothes where they can just tuck it into, but it doesn't go through the wash, so it doesn't wreck it, you know, on the other hand either. Yeah, that's hard. Now, does she pretty much sleep through the night, or are
Oh
you
no.
were okay? So that's really tough when you're not able to sleep through the night. You know, if they're not sleeping through the night, do you worry that she could wander, you know, while you're asleep?
I'm definitely a light sleeper because of that. Because I sometimes feel her grabbing my foot, and I wake up and I'm like immediately scared. Immediately scared because she grabs my foot. I'm like, okay, what's going on? Like, who's grabbing me by the foot? And it's her, and she wakes up, and I just put on the TV. Luckily, I do have one of those little latches on the doors up top, but she doesn't even reach. So she can't get it out of the room. That's one thing for sure. But she just watches the TV and then goes back to sleep.
Okay, well,
But I
that's
just make sure she's not like touching anything that she's not supposed to, and then I go back to sleep.
okay. Well, it sounds like you've got a good mode there. For you, was it hard getting diagnosed? I hear from so many families that it takes so long.
Yeah, it took a really long time. It took a couple years. It actually, the year that she had her heart attack, my mom had a heart attack. That's when they told me, like, hey, do you know your mom has this? And I'm like, yes, you're basically a doctor, actually confirmed it with me. They're like, she has dementia. And I'm like, yes. And they're like, are you being seen by the right specialist, by this, by that? And I'm like, no, because I've been trying to get this diagnosis. They won't see you if you're not diagnosed with the disease. And that's where we like slowly started getting a neurologist involved. She has her heart doctor involved. She also has had like a small stroke in her brain. It was so minimal that it didn't physically impaired her. It was more mentally. And it's been really tough because I see a huge decline in her dementia. And they told me the process of dementia for her is going to be a lot quicker because she has a smaller brain and her brain is so atrophy that that it's going to be a lot quicker for her, that she's going to go through stages a lot faster. She's going to forget a lot faster. So it's been very difficult.
Wow, and you've been dealing with it for 8 years already.
Yeah.
And so yeah, that makes it tough. And I think right now especially it's so hard to get into a doctor and you have to have a referral to get to the specialist and they don't really want to refer you to the specialist because they're so backlogged. What I'm hearing is, 6 to 12 months out before
Yeah.
people can even get an appointment. And that's an awful long time because most families aren't going in early. They're going in when they're pulling their hair out, going, something's really wrong. And when you have to wait that long, things can drastically change. And in the meantime, they really aren't given any support. I would love to see at least the medical professionals say, call the Alzheimer's Association or the Lewy body or, go to Dementia Map. These are where you can find some resources. But I'm not hearing that from anybody around the world that that is happening. And I think that's a big, big rabbit hole that needs to be dealt with. Because it's to me, it's almost sinful that people have to wait this long.
Yeah, there's like a huge, I mean, like you said, a huge rabbit hole. I know for in my case, my mom's primary doctor, she's like, are you getting the support that you need? Are you taking care of yourself? Are you putting yourself first? But I'm like, it's really hard putting yourself first when you don't have the support team that you need, especially from doctors, because I don't understand it. I'm doing this day to day, and I'm just going off on my own, like today this worked, okay, tomorrow's not gonna work the same because she's not gonna be having the same symptoms as she was the day before, and there's no roadmap or there's no how you call it handbook to say do this, and if you keep doing this, then it's gonna come out to her being better, but it's not going to get better because there's no cure for dementia.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is when you not only are you self-educating yourself, that takes more time because, I know when this happened to my family, I didn't know what I didn't know. I didn't even know what to search for. I didn't know what kind of help was even out there, and so that makes you flounder even more. And so, we've got to do better in terms of getting people
Definitely.
directed to resources, products, and tools, and groups, and informational forums that will not let them feel so isolated. Because I don't know if you experience this, but I hear this from so many families at all different levels, from young kids to to couples who have been married, you know, for 70 years, how isolating this disease can be, not only to the person diagnosed, but to the one caring for them.
And it definitely has.
You felt that yourself?
Definitely, especially I had made a huge move from LA to San Diego. Just because I needed to get out of a really horrible situation and I needed to get my mom away from something so toxic. I feel very isolated here in San Diego because I don't feel like I have the support. I'm living at my uncle's house. He's always at work and you know, my cousins, they're young, they're teenagers. They don't understand having somebody with dementia around. And it's been a lot harder because now it's 100% me. Back when I was in LA, I had a little bit more support. Back when I was with my ex would take care of my mom while I worked or while I showered, while I go to the bathroom, while I did little things for myself. Now it's just like my mom's attached to my hip 24/7. I don't have that support here. Mm-hmm. And a lot harder, and I've gotten into many, many, many conversations with my sisters and my siblings that I can't do this anymore. Mentally, physically, emotionally, I told them, I'm like, it's been 8 years. I've been doing this on my own 8 years with no family support, and I need the support now more than ever. And we're making the transition of them coming to pick up my mom and taking care of her, taking her to Connecticut. We're in that process.
Okay. And that's the whole other side of the country. So
yeah, it's going to be a huge transition for her.
Yeah. So whereabouts are your siblings all located? Are they all out east or?
For the most part, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
For the most part. Okay. I'm the only family member from my mom's side that's here in California.
Okay. Yeah, that makes it hard. You'll have to go through a big adjustment too when she leaves.
Yeah, I'm going to have to figure out who I am after this because I've been Lily, the caretaker for her mother for so many years. And now I'm just going to have to make a huge adjustment where I don't have her every day, where I just, okay, so what do I do today now? Like, I have all this free time. I don't have to be worrying about cooking, cleaning. Well, I do have to worry about that, but like not for another human being, just for myself.
Mm-hmm. It's tough. You know, I did that with my folks. It was just kind of overwhelming. And with this one, it wasn't that my dad went someplace else to be cared for. My dad had passed away, but I had this huge opening in my life. And I didn't, you know, and friends would say, well, what do you like to do? And I'm like, I don't know. I haven't even considered that question for so many years. I mean, because you just don't put yourself first. And it's really foreign to not know what you even like, you know, or what would you like to try? Because you get so far removed from that whole realm of living. And in COVID, I'm sure has made that even worse and, you know, pulled people in. So yeah, it's a tough transition, and you really kind of, like you said, go, who do I want to be when I grow up? You know,
yeah.
What do I want? And then the nice thing is it really opens the door for you to explore. And I know for me, like I started taking classes, I started traveling a little bit more and just kind of experimenting with what do I want my life to look like? Because I really didn't have a clue. Yeah, I would just prepare yourself for that. And also maybe how you're going to communicate with your family, because you're going to want to know how's it going at that other end, because you've been in control for so long. And
yeah.
So I would say make sure that you have set up a strong communication system. And, you know, your mom's going to want to hear your voice. And sometimes talking on the phone doesn't work as well as like on Zoom, because they need to see you and they need to see your lips move and things like that. It's nice that they're stepping up, you know, to help with that. And is it just one of your siblings, or is there going to be a few that will all kind of be helping care?
It's going to be two of them, and they're older than me. I'm the youngest from my mom's side. My mom had quite a few kids. It's a very long story, but yeah, it's my two older sisters. They're going to be taking care of her. And my oldest sister, she has two younger kids. And the youngest one, they come and visit every year, and like they come and see her. And but he doesn't understand it. He's like, why is grandma acting like this? Why is she not like, my mom has a tendency of if she sees something nice, she'll put it in her pocket. You know, it's not her necessarily stealing, it's her putting it away so nobody else takes it. And he's like, grandma took my toy, or grandma took this, grandma took that. I'm like, look, she doesn't know any better. Like, you're a kid yourself, but grandma could you learn? But grandma's not learning at this point. Grandma is just declining. And it's a lot for the younger ones to deal with it because they don't know. They just know that this is mine and grandma's touching it.
When they get in that mind stage too, which makes it even depending on how old they are. My mom used to, we would go out to eat, and she would all of a sudden, I mean, you would, if you would just turn your head for a second, she had every jelly packet, every butter packet, the sugar packets in her purse, and a couple of times she nabbed salt and pepper shakers even off the table, which she would never do in a zillion years. But she also went back in time, and maybe she was thinking of the days of depression when things were slim to none in terms of availability and things. I mean, you just don't know. When she moved into a nursing home, because my dad was there, her thing was she knew she had allergies. And so every time she saw a Kleenex box, she like lobbed onto it. And at the nursing home, once somebody has a Kleenex box, it's theirs. They can't like put it back. So she would have like 10 Kleenex boxes in her room, and different things. And again, a Kleenex box looked like a Kleenex box, and she always thought it was hers, and she always knew she had allergies and she needed to have a Kleenex by her. And so that was just one of those old ingrained habits. That she wanted to be prepared, for and things. Same with like jewelry and all of that kind of stuff was really important to her too. And then it got to a point where we had to take her good jewelry away because we never knew what was going to end up happening to it, and replace that. Or purses, she would lose her purse, and then that would get her really, really upset. When she couldn't find it. So we started buying two and three purses that were the same. So if she lost one, staff could give her another one. And the other one would always pop up somewhere, but just to try to keep her calm because she couldn't backtrack.
Yeah, most definitely. For my mom, she had a fascination of napkins. She would stuff them in her bra, stuff them in there. She'll always keep it. And also face masks. When the pandemic started, I guess she was so used to, okay, here, put on your face mask, put on your face mask. Anywhere we would go, put on your face mask. And also her shoes. She will not go to sleep if she does not have her shoes on. If she is her she I mean shoes are off, nope. She wakes up and she starts looking for them. She starts going like she's like, nope, I'm not sleeping until I have my shoes. And I just let her sleep with her shoes because if she doesn't sleep, I can't sleep and we can't be both not
Well, and
sleeping.
you have to pick your battles. And I mean, it could go back to some time, way back in time where she didn't feel safe and maybe she was going to have to run in the middle of the night. I mean, we don't always know what our parents have been through, because a lot of things that weren't good experiences were hidden from us and stuff. And so what I always find is that there's usually a logical rationale to why they want to do something. We just don't know what it is all the time. But I like that you're allowing her to sleep with her shoes on because it's about comfort. It's about her comfort, and her comfort affects your comfort. Sometimes we get in this, as care partners, we get in this role of No, you don't sleep with your shoes on, and then everything just kind of escalates, and then nobody's sleeping, and everybody's angry, and that gets you nowhere. Where it's like, okay,
Exactly.
so she wears the shoes to bed. It's what we're all gonna live. This isn't a safety issue, and it's calming to her. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons that any care partner at any age needs to learn is that we really have to focus on emotional comfort when it comes to dementia, because again, when they're comfortable, we can be more comfortable too. We're not as anxious and as stressed. And it's letting go of our control patterns,
Definitely.
it's letting go of those right and wrong, moments and things that we've been taught over our life aren't really as near as important as what we thought they were. I think, those, like you said, those sleep issues are so drastically important, because if you get sleep deprived, I mean, it's hard to catch up on something like that. And when you're sleep deprived, chances are you're gonna land in the hospital before they are.
Yeah, that's what I've heard. A lot of times caregivers and caretakers, they end up landing in the hospital because they neglect their own health needs. They neglect the headaches, instead of whatever is going on with your body, you start ignoring it because in your mind, it's just like my mom or my loved one needs me more than I need to go to the doctor, and which is not true. You need it as much. And with my mom, I'm very thankful because she's a very anxious person, but she's not aggressive at all. She's not aggressive, she's not violent, she's very, very happy. You just start doing a happy dance with her, she starts dancing with you, and she likes to go up to people, strangers, to say hi to them and give them a hug and say, "How are you?" And she acts like if she knows this person. A lot of people understand it, a lot of people don't, but I try to keep her as happy and I try to keep her personality. Because I feel like it's very important, because if you just let her fall into that depression of letting her cry, I'll be like, okay, we're not, it's not that I don't let her cry, it's just that let's go ahead and let's start dancing. Let's dance a little bit. Instead of crying, let's dance. Let's dance it out. Like, I don't want her to fall into that depression or fall into the aggressiveness.
Well, and that's smart. You've learned to help them transition, help your mom transition, out of one state into another. And I think so often, especially nowadays, I think we're having such a mental health crisis because we've told people don't show that, but we haven't given an outlet to it. And when you're giving, a physical outlet, for those emotions, it's amazing what happens. And so she's not bubbling up and getting more anxious and more aggressive or, whatever might be going on. But when you see that, then you get anxious and you start bubbling up, and then you both start feeding off one another and you don't even realize it's happening. And so, as care partners, I think it's really important that we slow down and recognize what our body is telling us, and we have to have a release, because I'm sure there's been times where your mom has seemed comfortable and but you were anxious. Something was not going, well in your life. And then you can go talk to her, and then sometimes they'll mirror that back to us. And then we get mad because we think they started it, but we actually started with the anxiety. And a lot of people don't understand that people with dementia, no matter where they are in the process, they're still able to interpret our body language, and it's kind of like when you're blind or deaf, people say the other senses pick up. And that's what people with dementia tell me all the time is, their vision a lot of times is clearer and brighter in terms of color. The sound is louder and crisper. And so something that's not loud to you and I might be really loud to them. And, again, it depends on what part of the brain is being affected, and everyone is different. one person is not like another. They're similar, but yet very different. And what works one moment might not work the next. And so it's really about developing a toolkit, sharing stories, so people don't feel as isolated and alone. I mean, there's a lot to be said, I think, for feeling heard. Even if somebody can't fix what you're going through, it's like, no, they actually listened.
Yeah, another thing is that with my mom's symptoms, because everybody has different symptoms, my mom's symptoms, one of the symptoms that's being really affected is her speech. So if I don't catch her right then and there, like when my mom had her heart attack, if I didn't pay attention that moment that she said, my left arm hurts. Like she told me my left arm hurts. And I was just like, okay, that's not okay. You know, and she's like, and then minutes later, she's like, okay, I'm fine. Nothing. And then I'm like, your arm hurts. She's like, no, it doesn't hurt. No. And like, it's the dementia that's telling her that it doesn't hurt, because their pain tolerance gets extremely high. It gets really high. And she's like, no, I feel better. And I'm like, no, I'm going to take you to the hospital. Let's go ahead and get you checked. If it's nothing, we come home. If it's something, let's get it treated. And sure enough, we get there. It's the beginning of the pandemic and I'm not allowed in. So I'm like in a mess and she's in a mess because I'm not right next to her like I'm always am. And then they bring me inside and then they tell me your mom's having a heart attack. We have to rush her into emergency surgery and get her, like, you know, put a stent in her heart. And I was just like, okay, this is really happening. I have no family here in California. So I called my sister and I'm like, hey, don't freak out. Don't start going crazy. I'm like, but my mom is going into surgery. They're like, wait, what's going on? And she's like, she had a heart attack. And of course, they go crazy. They're like, oh my gosh, she's having a heart attack. And they don't know what to do because they're 3,000 miles away. And I'm here by myself. And it was a lot at that very moment. But dementia patients, they have a really, really high pain tolerance. They don't tell you frequently that they're having these pains, and you have to really listen to them. If I don't listen to my mom and that she's having these pain, then it could get worse.
Yeah,
especially with her speech being impaired by the symptoms.
Yeah, and it could be where she's just rubbing her arm and you're like, why are you rubbing your arm? Oh, I don't know, you know. But again, they don't, you know, bladder infections, all of those types of things,
oh yeah,
can occur, and they don't know how to communicate it because they don't necessarily know where it's coming from, you know, or what's causing it. And so, yeah, that can be really, really difficult. So as care partners, really using what I call your multi-sensory skills to really piece things together. And sometimes, you know, and not everybody believes this, but I'm a big believer in intuition. But my intuition won't come through if I'm all rattled and crazy. So I have to stay calm and I have to, you know, kind of ask for help in terms of what should I do next? Because this, you know, it's not like an arrow sign going, yep, down this path, this is where you're going. I mean, it really is a guessing game with much of it. And, but I think if you're guided by their comfort and really knowing what makes them happy, what makes them comfortable, you know, to me, those are two of the biggest keys up front, you know. So even you sharing with your siblings, you know, mom really likes to dance. If she's getting stressed or whatever, you know, these are her songs and these are the moves we do, even, you know, or whatever it might be, will be really helpful for them. Now, will they implement that stuff? You know, somebody might not like to dance or feel that that's silly. And a lot of times people won't implement those things until they're pushed to their limit. And then it's like, okay, I got nothing to lose here. This is driving me crazy. And then they're kind of shocked at the results, but there's
lots of how much it works.
Yeah. There's lots of different ways to distract, and each of us have our own relationships with people too. And so that's going to vary a little bit as well, but music and dance can be extremely powerful Powerful, powerful tools. And if anyone hasn't watched, and you can get this on YouTube, or I'm sure you can purchase it on Amazon, is Alive Inside. And you will see the magic of music and what it does to people in terms of waking them up and just sometimes being more cognitively connected even after listening to music. Sometimes speech will be better, or they'll be more present or more active, and people are just shocked. And then they think back, what was the difference? Oh, we had music playing, you know, or she was involved with singing or dancing, whatever it might be there. One of the questions I wanted to ask you too is, do you think there's a wrong way to care for a loved one? Do you think it's that black and white?
Definitely not with your not doing it with your whole heart. I feel like that if you're not doing it with your whole heart, you're gonna just be aggravated. You're just gonna be frustrated. You're just gonna be getting mad. You're just gonna be yelling. You're just gonna be cursing at the world, like, you know. And I think if you're not gonna do it with your heart, then I feel like you're gonna make mistakes. You're gonna be more wind up than them being wind up. Mm-hmm. And then when you're wind up, like how you said, they mirror our feelings, and they're gonna feel that, and they're gonna wanna be like, oh my God, what's wrong? Like, what am I doing wrong? And they don't know what they're doing wrong. They don't know if left from right. They don't know if you know, what's up and down. And they don't know that they're the ones making you the one upset.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if you're not doing this with your whole heart, and you're just, you know, going in halfway just because you have to do it, just because they're there next to you, just because you're the one, you know, you're the daughter, you're the son, you're the husband, mother, like whatever the relationship you are with the person with dementia or Alzheimer's, is just, you're not gonna get the same results. I feel like if once you start doing with your heart and you start learning from them what they like, what they don't like, what triggers them, what helps them calm down when they're, you know, very, very agitated, or they get very restless, or if they want to, like, for my mom, I take her on walks. It mm-hmm. calms her down. If she doesn't have at least one walk a day, she is very, 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 like, how you call it, anxious, and she won't stop until she walks.
Okay.
Yeah, that's one thing that has always helped my mom. It's just like trying to understand them a little bit more. But if you're going to continue being mad at the world because you're the one taking care of her, you're not going to get the results that you want. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's the wrong way to do it.
Yeah.
There's no, you could read 100 million types of how-to books, but it's not going to be the same because it's not your mother or your person that has dementia.
Mm-hmm. Well, and even with that, I mean, you can look at so many different scenarios with this too. What works in one moment might not work the next, because our days are different, you know, and, you know, you could be upset, you could be excited. Same with her. She could be sad, she could be happy. And those different moods, just starting out with that, they're going to trigger a different response. Their memory in terms of what they're connecting with, is going to affect how they react to something. And so, yeah, it's always different. So never think that you have dementia in the bag, like you figured it out, because it will prove you wrong multiple times mm-hmm. over. I think dementia is really here to teach us to be more insightful, more flexible, more kind, less judgmental, and
more patient.
More patient. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Everyone says that. And then also to really appreciate the real simple things in life that sometimes we overlook because we're looking for bigger and better. And, you know, we're keeping up with the Joneses. And it's, you know, I found it was really the little things with my mom that calmed my heart down even after she passed. You know, it was, I can still hear her giggle, or I can still see her smile and her dimples, you know, or a squeeze of the hand. Those are the things that I remember. You know, it's not, it isn't the big birthday parties or the, you know, whatever. It was a very small, gentle, peaceful, very well connected moments, or lotion and just massaging her hands, just having that connection, or maybe sitting next to her watching TV in silence. You know, it was just those peaceful moments. And I think we need to look for more of those, and how do we create those? Same with moments of joy. You know, I have a saying when I go speak, you know, what do you want in life? Do you want tears, fears, or joy? Well, everyone says joy, but you're not going to find joy if you're not looking for it. And you can't create it if you're not in the present moment. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you are feeling great loss and, you know, in grief and you're crying, you know, you're kind of living in the past of what you've lost. And then the fear is usually what we project in the future could come, which can scare the bejesus out of us. Mm-hmm. And if we're in either of those modes, you know, we can't either identify or create joy, because we have to really be in relationship with them. We have to really be paying attention.
Definitely.
And to me, that was a huge lesson. And I remember once I got it thinking, why aren't people teaching us this when we're little? And then I think, well, because kids already understand that, you know, they're not judging. They just want to play, you know, and then we unlearn that, you know, we teach them bad habits.
We're the ones that start putting in our head that this world is so bad. But if we look at the world like little, like how you said it, like children, you'll see that they don't have a care in the world. They're like, I want to be friends with everybody. I want to be kind to everybody. And people are just kinder. It, you know, it'll make somebody's day just by smiling at them. I know with my mom, by her remembering who I am and saying my nickname, Lilita, I know that she knows who I am, and that's what gets me through the day, because my mom has totally forgotten who a lot of people are. Like, my uncle, when he's home, he asks her, what's my name? And then my mom responds, the only response she has is saying her name. Mm-hmm. Is saying her name, because my mom knows her name. We repeat it to her 1,000,000,000 trillion times. You ask her, what's her name? She'll be like, she'll say her whole name, first name, middle name, last name. Mm-hmm. She'll be like, she'll say it proudly. And then you ask her, what's my name? And then she'll repeat her name again. And I'm like, okay, but that's your name. What is my name? Mm-hmm. And then she'll just look at you like, I don't know. I don't know what your name is. So the moments that she does remember who I am, those are the ones that I do cherish, because I'm like, I'm right here.
Yep.
So usually when she's asked for me, it's because I'm probably quiet for like 2 minutes, and she'll be like, where's Lily? Where's mm-hmm. Lily? Like, you know, and I think that's going to be another transition she's going to have to go to, because once she moves to my sister, I'm not going to be there. And when she asks for my name, she's going to be like, where's Lily? And I'm not there. It's going to be something huge for her, because she's so used to me being next to her.
Yeah. Well, and it's going to be huge for your sisters too. Like, why does she keep asking that? You know, that's going to be a normal thing that's going to go through their head. And what they have to understand is you have become her security blanket, mm-hmm. because you've been with her 24/7. And that transfer is not just going to happen overnight. It's going to take time. And so for them to be patient and not personally be offended by that, or And I would recommend too that people don't necessarily question her in terms of who am I, you know, what's my name, because that's going to cause her more frustration and more angst. And a lot of us care partners have to learn to, when we come into a room, you know, we have to put a smile on our face and kind of get a glint in her eye and say, you know, and I'll just use your name. Hi, Lily. I'm Lori. I'm your daughter. You know, I'm come here for whatever, you know, and just give them that information up front. and see what happens. And there might be times when they're like, no, you're not my daughter. And they might not recognize you because you've aged. They've gone back in time and their daughter is little. And, you know, those types of things can happen too, that a lot of times families don't understand. My mom used to call me her mom.
Exactly with me.
And my brother, you know, was with me one time when my mom was at the nursing home, and we walked in and she yelled to her friends, and there's my mother, and she takes such good care of me. And my brother's like, what is she talking about? You know, you look nothing like grandma. You know, he just kind of went on and on. And then he went on to say, well, she calls me Chuck all the time, and it just ticks me off. Well, Chuck was my mom's brother. And so I had to explain kind of both situations to him. And I said, Mark, you're forgetting mom didn't have a good relationship with her mom. When her dad died when she was 15 years old of a massive heart attack. And my grandma, story has it, kind of had a nervous breakdown, and she left my mom and she went around and kind of traveled the world and left my mom home alone. Now, you couldn't get by with that in today's world, but back then, that's what happened. So my mom felt very abandoned and disconnected from her mom when she did come back. And I said, Mark, I feel honored that somehow she has healed her relationship with her mother through our relationship. I think that I'm think, how cool is that? I get to be part of that, you know? And he kind of shook his head like, well, that makes no sense to me. And then he's like, well, what about me? And, you know, why does she call me Chuck? And I said, Mark, she's gone back in time before she had kids, before she was married. And I said, Mark, if you're honest and you go look in the mirror, you look like Uncle Chuck when he was younger. You look identical to Uncle Chuck when he was younger, you know? And he's like, but how could she not know me? I've been her son for 50 years. And I said, because her brain isn't holding those memories. It's gone back in time. And, you know, she loved her brother. So that's a compliment. She loves you.
Yeah.
You know,
my mom, it's funny how you say that they go back in time. My mom, sometimes she'd be asking, where are the little girls at? And I think that in that moment, she's trying to remember me and my sisters when we were younger. She was just trying to be like, where are my daughters? Like, mm-hmm. you know, and I tell her, oh, the girls went to school. Like, they should be back later. But when they come home, they'll be here. And she'll be like, oh, okay. Or I'll tell her, oh, the girls went out to play, or they went to the store, or, you know, just to get her distracted, not necessarily dismissing that, you know, she's going back into time, but like just telling her, hey, like, it's okay. They'll be back.
You're safe and safe. And getting to that point, and there's a lot of people that say, well, I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to say that. And I'm like, it's not about being right or wrong. It's about giving them comfort. Like sometimes people will say, you know, maybe someone will ask why their spouse isn't there. And they're like, well, they died, or, you know, they want to go see their parents. Well, they've been dead for 30 years. Well, now they're reliving that pain all over again. And we all know how horrible that feels, to feel that grief. Why would we want to spin somebody into that again when we can say, oh, they'll be back later? Because, you know, if you believe in an afterlife, you are going to meet up at a later time, you know. But there are some people that are just dead against that. You know, I call it a fiblet. Some people call it a therapeutic lie. There's all different kinds of names for it. But to me, it's all about getting them in a comfort zone. Some women will, you know, be looking for their young children, and maybe a baby doll is going to just be the comfort that they need because they want to care for that baby. And some people will have that at 3 o'clock, the kids are coming home from the bus. So they might need, you know, where are the kids? Or I have to go to work. You know, those were their schedules. Mm-hmm. So how do you plug in and give comfort to that, or distract them and give them something else to do? Like you said, maybe you just start dancing and that becomes your routine. You know, there's lots of different ways to deal with this, to make you both feel comfortable. And I think, like, if you can get comfortable with the fib lid or the therapeutic lies, some of those memories, I know for me, just put a smile on my face. Because, and not that I'm laughing at my mom, mm-hmm. but I'm smiling because of the comfort that she got in that situation, in that belief in her moment. And, you know, you can't, especially as the disease progresses, you can't rationalize with somebody mm-hmm. with dementia. That portion of the brain typically isn't going to be there to be able to do that. So why are you beating yourself up and them to try to make that happen when it
yeah.
physically is impossible, you know, at that stage?
And I think that's also a huge win because they're actually remembering something in their life. You know, especially what I try to do, I try to keep the happy memories alive and then the sad ones. Let's go ahead and change the subject. Let's talk about something else. Let's not go into the depression, the sadness. It's not that I'm this, you know, totally dismissing that, but it's just like I want to keep her as happy as I could.
Yeah.
And it could get into a huge rabbit hole and she could get into depression, and then I don't want her to be in depressed. I want her to be happy. I want her to remember of always being happy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Well, this has been a wonderful conversation, Lily. Is there anything that we haven't covered that you think needs to be said yet?
We just need to find a way to do better, especially for our loved ones. I know you do a lot on your end with, you know, Alzheimer's Speaks, but I feel like if everybody puts in and they share their story and they, you know, try to, you know, take a little bit of time and get to know what dementia is, we might have a better outcome. We might have, you know, a better way to deal with it, because there's no cure. When hopefully in the future we start finding cure, but there's no cure for dementia. It's one of like the saddest diseases that I say we all have to experience. And we just need to keep spreading the word out. That's pretty much it. Like, we just need to keep spreading our word, because the more people know about it, the more they want to do something about it. They know a lot about cancer, but they don't know much about dementia.
Yeah. Well, and I think part of it is we have to make comfortable environments and platforms for people to share their story, for people to learn. I think people are eager to help, but they don't know how. And there's been, you know, there's such a big stigma, you know, that, well, this isn't going to happen to me. That only happens to old people. My folks aren't that old or whatever. And then all of a sudden it happens to you. Mm-hmm. You know, there are people out there that still think, you know, you're only going to get dementia if you're in your 70s or 80s. And I know many, many people who have been diagnosed with dementia in their 30s, 40s, and 50s.
Yeah.
And that changes the whole scenario, let alone in their 60s and 70s. So, you know, I've talked with one mother who's had two children, one she lost at 21 and the other one is in her early 30s that is dealing with dementia. So, you know, none of us are safe from this, and sooner or later, we're all going to run into it. So we might as well be more educated. Mm-hmm. And if not for ourselves, we're going to have a friend or, you know, a family member or a coworker or a neighbor who's going to need the information that we've run across. So we really need to share more. Social media has made that much easier to do for all of us. And so the more conversations we have, I think it makes it easier for people to step into the conversation and learn, because it's not as awkward. You know, there's more out there to choose from, and it's not as scary. There's a lot of hope and a lot of good that can come from this. And you know, there's lots of different ways that people can help, family or not, in terms of this, from businesses becoming dementia friendly and, you know, supporting people out in the communities, to, you know, socialization platforms that can help engage maybe give a little respite to somebody and things. So again, I thank you for your time and sharing your story with us. You'll have to keep us posted on how things are going, and maybe your sisters will want to come back on the show with you.
Yeah,
talk about how the good, the bad, and the uglies of the transition, you know, because they'll probably be all three of those pieces. That's just kind of part of change. But knowing that there's a greater good out there. Again, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Great. To our listeners, again, I hope you like, click, and share this show. You know, the possibilities of doing good is endless out there. So, you know, the more we can educate one another, the more we can understand what someone else is going through, the easier we make their journey and the smarter we make ourselves in our journey moving forward as well. So thanks, everyone. We'll see you next time. Bye now.
It's time to rethink, renew, and reimagine retirement. Hey, everybody. Jared Sebesta here, host of Retire Repurposed. Now, this podcast is about the non-financial parts of retirement, which many times can be even more challenging than the financial. We believe retirement is not the end, rather the beginning of what could be the most impactful, purposeful, and fulfilling season of a person's life. So don't retire. Become repurposed. To listen now, search Retire Repurposed on your favorite podcast platform, Senior Resource, or Life Audio.